I want to say that I appreciate Mark Mickelson very, very much. I would be in Nigeria. It's my assigned feast site. But since he was going, I was allowed to come here. Two of our daughters are here with us, four granddaughters. And yet, I'll tell you what, I want to be in Nigeria so badly. I just miss them. Mark Mickelson called Michelle, and by the way, it was mentioned, and I want to mention that Megan, his daughter, is here, and they are here because of their schooling. They went 2 years ago, and they fell in love with God's people in Nigeria. And they are lovely people. They are wonderful people. And Megan and Derek are here, and Michelle. And Mark finally got hold to Michelle, called her on the phone, and he sent this message. So this is in addition to what we just had. Weather is cool. Water is hot. People are happy. Now what he means is, 10 years ago when I was there, the weather was so hot. How hot was it? It was over 100 every day. We had no air conditioning, no electricity. Water ran occasionally, and we had to save it in a tub to take a bath in at night, and it was over 90 degrees at night, and we couldn't open the windows because the screens were all torn, and my wife and I would lay in bed. It was so unbearably hot. I mean, even our fingers were spread apart, and we basically were thinking, don't touch me. This is not a romantic feast. We have had feasts with no water and just warm, dirty buckets of water to bathe in. One time we were there, and I would try the shower every now and then just to see if the water was running. And, you know, we'd sprayed, and I'd clean up the roaches every morning and, you know, try to get them before Lucretia saw them. We'd go around with toilet paper. We did have toilet paper. And I'd go around with the toilet paper and pick them up. But I turned on the water, and cold water came out of that shower. And Lucretia and I just began ripping our clothes off. I mean, we both wanted in that shower. So God has blessed them this year. The rainy season, the monsoon in the summer, is the coolest time of year. But it has extended this year into October. And so that's why he said weather is cool, water is hot. They're at a place that has a generator. So they have air conditioning in the room, in their individual rooms. They have hot water. I've had electricity and no water heater. And people are happy, and they are beautiful. They're wearing their Nigerian outfits. African people, especially the women, have beautiful outfits. But the Nigerian men, to me, have the nicest African male outfits. And I thought this morning, Fred, you forgot to bring your Nigerian outfit. I should have brought one and worn one for you. I only wear them at the services. They're much more comfortable. They're cotton. They're bright. They're just vibrant colors. And I could have worn one for you today. I don't even take a suit to Nigeria anymore. I want to talk about Africa. Oh, by the way, I should mention that when Mark called, and the church owns a mobile phone over there, and he was using it to call his wife, and he told her that the only place he could find that it would work was when he was sitting on the commode. Now, she did say that he put the lid down. And that's unbelievable. To actually have a lid on a commode in Nigeria? I mean, usually there's not even a toilet seat. You just sit on the china, and you're thankful you have a toilet, if you have one. But he's sitting there, and when he told her that, I mean, just the whole thing. She's missing her husband. She wants to be with him. She wants to be in Nigeria. She broke down and cried. And it affects me. I love those people. She wants to be there. I want to give a sermon on Africa in prophecy. The glory to come. The glory to come. In 1990, I was at the feast in Ghana. And one of the members there came up to me, a black man. And he said, Mr. Kellas, I won't give the West African dialect for the rest of this. He said, we know that black people can't govern themselves. I would have never said that. However, my response to him was, white people can't govern themselves either. I mean, his statement was correct. And I put together a sermon that I want to give now. I've given it a few times, and it was suggested, you know, I suggested this as a possibility, and it was said, you sound like you're interested in this. I am. I want to tell you that no race is inferior. It may seem it. No race is inferior. Which type or species of dog does God love the most? Or flower? Or race? Now, flowers are different, and dogs are different, and races are different, but they're not inferior. They're not inferior. And I just want to give a sermon on that and exalt the Creator of every race. This is not to exalt any race, but the Creator of every race, including the black people of Africa. Now, Africa has some wonderful people, and just like every other country, it has some horrible people. And they are under a curse. I want to turn first to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 through 29. Which of our eight granddaughters do my wife and I love the most? We love them all the same. See, to emphasize, what I could have done was had, you know, the PowerPoint, and to emphasize that every child is precious, just like every race and every person's precious to God, I could have had pictures of my granddaughters up here. See, that would have, and tell you, and then, but we would have never gotten through this sermon. Eight girls. No boys. A man cannot be surrounded by too many pretty women who climb up in his lap and say, I love you, Papa. Anyway, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26, for you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. And the base things of the world and the things which are despised God has chosen, and the things which are not to bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. That's presence. That's a principle. God chooses the weak. Now, what do you think? Do you think Satan chooses the weak? Or does Satan, what do you think? Who does Satan choose to use? The strong, wouldn't you say? The mighty. Look at the rulers of this world. Men of strength and power and violence. But God chooses the weak. Now the same is true that God usually starts with things that are small. Usually doesn't even choose the firstborn. God chose Abel, not Cain. It was an attitude. God chose Abraham. He wasn't the firstborn. God chose Isaac. He was not firstborn, was of his mother, but not his father. Jacob was not the firstborn. Joseph wasn't even the second or third. Wasn't the last, but close to it. God chose and exalted Ephraim, the secondborn. Moses was not the firstborn. David was not the mighty, strong, first, second, thirdborn. God chose the small, the young. And then he makes them great. Jesus came as a carpenter. In the book of Daniel, the stone that is cut out without hands that smites the image on the foot is a little stone. But it grows to fill the whole earth. So God starts with things small and then he makes them great. We see that principle in the Bible. And as I mentioned, God chose and honored Abel's gift. Satan chose Cain. Did he choose him? Jesus said that Satan was a murderer from the beginning in the book of John, chapter 8. So who led the first murder? Who inspired it? It was Satan. And that is true in this world. Where did the black race come from? Now let me say there are some very ugly and stupid theories that have no basis in any fact at all and are absolutely ridiculous, and I would not even give them the honor of mentioning them. But the Bible does tell us. Now there's a possibility that in the Old Testament that we have something mentioning a woman who was black. Now I'm not going to go through it, but Zillah can mean shadow or dark. And there's a similar word in the Hebrew that is used in Nehemiah as dark. And there are similar Arabic words and Ethiopic words to Zillah that mean shadow or dark. And she had a daughter named Naamah. And that means pleasant. Jewish tradition is that she married Noah. And it's in the Mishnah. And if you look it up in the Encyclopedia Britannica about Naamah, the tradition is that she married Noah. Although later scholars of Judaism didn't want to have a descendant of Cain marrying Noah, so the tradition came along that she married Ham. But they still are saying she was there. But you don't know that Zillah was black. There's no way to know that Naamah was black. So those are just speculation. I don't mind mentioning speculation if we say, that's speculation. There's no proof in the Bible. No proof in the Bible. But I would like you to see where black people are mentioned in the Bible. Where they are mentioned. And that is, I want to start in Genesis chapter 10 and verses 1 and 2. In verse 1 of Genesis 10, now this is the genealogy of the sons of Noah. I felt before we tell of the prophecies of Africa, and let me extend that to all Gentiles, as was brought in the sermon yesterday, to all Gentiles, though I will focus especially on Africa, the country I love, the people I love. Now this is the genealogy of the sons of Noah. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now actually Japheth was the firstborn and is the father of the Asians. Shem is the father of perhaps most of the white people. And then Ham, we'll mention them specifically. Let me just mention it mentions the sons of Japheth in verse 2 because he was the firstborn, so he's mentioned first there, even though he wasn't listed first in verse 1. Then when we get down to, let's see, verse 6, verse 6. And we come to the sons of Ham. Now, let me just say that probably all of us have some Hamitic blood in us. And I'll even mention that. And mentions four of the sons that he had: Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, and Canaan. I want to talk about these sons for a moment. These were, for the most part, mighty and strong men, powerful men. Let's notice, I want to look at just some of them. Mitzrayim is the name for Egypt. Matter of fact, in the Old Testament, where you see the word Egypt, the Hebrew word is Mitzrayim. Now, was that a powerful tribe? I mean, look at the Egyptians, one of the first really great empires. So we have to say that this son of Ham became a powerful man. I'm skipping Cush. Put, we really don't know a whole lot about. We are told by Josephus that he is the father of the Libyans. However, that was some time back, and they apparently migrated out because the Phoenicians moved in at about the 8th century, and then you had the Greeks coming in and the Romans coming in and just basically pushed them out, and they aren't sure where they went. They may have migrated. There is some theory that Put was a black man. Mitzrayim was not. I mean, if you see the Egyptians on their tombs, they might be a little brown, but they're not black. And it goes on, so we don't know about Put, to Canaan. Now, Canaan, the Bible says, was powerful. Remember when the spies went in and they saw the Canaanites and they said, we are like grasshoppers in their eyes. And their city walls are up to the sky. And 10 of the spies just made everyone afraid, so they didn't go into the promised land till 40 years later. Canaan was a powerful man and had powerful children. Now, on the Egyptian walls, they have pictures of them. And they are swarthy, but they are not black. I want to go back now, then, to Cush. And by the way, let me mention something about Canaan. I have heard people say, well, isn't the curse of Canaan on the black people? And the answer is, blacks did not descend from Canaan. Canaan did not go into Africa. They were in the land of what? Canaan. What we now call Palestine. And most of them may have been destroyed when Joshua led the children of Israel in. They were to kill them. They weren't all destroyed, but many of them were. And there's no evidence they ever went into Africa. And as I said, on the Egyptian tombs, it shows them as being swarthy, but not black. Now we can come to Cush. The word Cush can mean black. Whenever you see in the Bible the word Ethiopia, it is the Hebrew word Cush. So we can use Ethiopia and Cush interchangeably. It's the same meaning. Everywhere in the Bible you see Ethiopia. What color were and are the Ethiopians? They're black. And it's the same name that was applied to Nubia, Somaliland, and really eventually migrating into all of Africa. Cush was also a mighty individual. This word Cush is uniformly translated Ethiopia in the Septuagint. So we have found black people. The Hebrew word means Cush means black, but you won't find it in every Bible dictionary, and I don't know why, except maybe it's not considered politically correct, but you can find it in these, I haven't looked in all, Easton's Bible Dictionary, the Online Bible, Nelson's Bible Dictionary, the Biblical Cyclopedic Index, and the Open Bible, which I happen to have right here, and it lists Cush as meaning black, and also And I'm not going to turn to it. But Jeremiah, God asked Jeremiah, can the Ethiopian change his skin? Or the leopard his spots? Now, that was only said because the Ethiopian had distinctive skin, as opposed to what the Israelites had. Not that it was bad. God doesn't make bad things. God didn't make a single bad race. But I just bring it out. It's actually, can the Cushite change his skin? And I want to turn a little further down here to verse 7. Oh, no. Yes, verse 7. That's where I want to go. The sons of Cush. Now, here's a man whose name means black and lived in Ethiopia. His descendants went into Ethiopia. Were Seba, Havilah, or Evala, Sabta, Rama. Stop. I want you to remember the name Rama, because he's going to be mentioned in prophecy. And Sabtekna. I shouldn't even try these names. Now notice Rama is mentioned again. Sons, and the sons of Rama were Sheba and Dedan. Interestingly enough, Abraham had some grandsons named Sheba and Dedan, but it's eight generations different from this. And Abraham sent his son, who was the father of Sheba and Dedan, to the east. That's into Arabia. Now Arabia is kind of to the southeast, but in the Bible it's called east. Whereas Africa, Egypt and Africa are called south. Even though they get very close together. There's a strait called the Strait of Tears in Arabic down at the tip of the Red Sea. It's only 20 miles apart from Arabia and Yemen to Djibouti. Djibouti is the name of the African country. I'm not kidding you, there is a name named Djibouti. It sounds like a parent chasing a little toddler. I'm going to get Djibouti. And, but it's a little tiny country with Ethiopia on one side and Somalia on the other. But it's right on that little tip. There's only a 20-mile difference. And by the time Abraham sent his children, the children of Keturah, to the east into Arabia, by that time, Sheba and Dedan, who were the descendants of Cush, the grandsons of Cush, had become the great leaders in Nubia, in Somalia, in Ethiopia. Their tribes came to ascendancy. That's why they're mentioned right here. And he doesn't mention all of the others. The sons of Rama were Sheba and Dedan, and we'll find them mentioned in the Bible, whereas the others we don't. So remember Sheba and remember Dedan. Now notice verse 8. Here suddenly is another son that he mentions separately. Cush begot Nimrod. Let's ask ourselves, are these black people weak? Cush begot Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord, or it can mean instead of the Lord. They were looking to him to protect them. And the beginning of his kingdom, here was a great leader. Now, God didn't choose these people. They weren't weak enough. They were the strong. They were the mighty. They were the powerful. The beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calneh, and in the land of Shinar. From that land he went to Assyria and built Nineveh, Rehoboth, Ir, Calah. And it just goes on about his empires. Now, no descendants are mentioned of Nimrod, and tradition is that Shem, because Nimrod introduced the Babylonian mystery system, that Shem fought against him and killed him. And there are no descendants listed of this man. But who do you think used him? A mighty man. Satan. Satan likes strong people, mighty people. That may not. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. Anything, anybody that Satan uses eventually leads to degeneration. Whereas God, it builds up. Satan's way leads to degeneration and a curse, to be accursed by God. And that has happened here. I want to, you remember the Queen of Sheba? Oh, one thing I meant to mention. That little straight, the actual, and I've got it, the Arabic here is Bab el Mandeb, and that means Strait of Tears. And there is, and I got this out of Wikipedia, which is an online encyclopedia. It derives its name from the dangers attending its navigation, or according to an Arab legend, from the numbers who were drowned by the earthquake which separated Asia and Africa. I don't know. Arab traditions aren't the Bible, but it's interesting. All right, remember Sheba, the Queen of Sheba. Question is, was she a descendant of Abraham's grandson Sheba or Ham's grandson Sheba? Jesus said, and I'm not going to have you turn there, the queen of the, what's the word? South, shall rise up in the judgment with this generation and shall condemn it, for she came from the uttermost parts of the earth. They didn't just stay in Ethiopia. To hear the wisdom of Solomon, and behold, a greater than Solomon is here. I want you to know that there were magnificent empires in Africa, but they were ruled by Satan. They were filled with slavery, cannibalism, with bloodlust, with human sacrifice. Now, it's not just black people that have done that. That's occurred all over this world. That's occurred in Asia and China, Europe. Terrible things that have happened, that people have done. The Middle East, horrible things that have been done by different people. I mean, think of the strong people of this earth. What is the great? You know what the greatest curse is in Africa and most of this world? Rotten, corrupt leadership. Strong men. It's the worst thing you have in Africa, is corruption. It's hard to get anything done without paying somebody. Or to get down the road. The military stops you. They're looking for honor. That's a nice term for a little money. And they'll hold you up and they'll go through everything and go through your bags. And if you just hand them a few naira, which is the Nigerian money, or in Ghana or wherever you are, you're on your road. No problem. But there's terrible corruption that is in that area. I want to continue with the Queen of Sheba, though. This queen is enshrined in Ethiopian legends, particularly the Kabra Nagast, which is a book that means glory of the kings, as the queen of Ethiopia who bore by Solomon, probably this is just, you know, legend, not true. But I'm, you know, I wasn't there when she visited Solomon, so I heard, I'll bring his name, Dr. Hayes said she was probably about 90 years old, but I don't know. Anyway, as the queen of Ethiopia who bore by Solomon, the first king of Ethiopia. Josephus calls her, Jewish historian, queen of Egypt and Ethiopia, and also calls her queen of Ethiopia in the book of Antiquities of the Jews. And I have the chapter and verse and paragraph here if you want it. So we see Nimrod, and once again, Satan's societies start great. The end result is degeneracy. Babylon, what happened to it? Egypt, is it still great? Canaan, still great? Nubia, great empire, still great? No. North Africa, great empires. Carthage, Still great? No. No, all of Africa. You know, there's a curse on most of this world. There's a curse on most of this world, led by Satan. Curse on their food. Disease. Africa is cursed with a shortage of food. Terrible diseases. You say, well, boy, those people are inferior. Hey, wait a second. What if we had their curses? The tsetse fly, the malaria. They're cursed with insects. Their snakes are curses. You know, I've been on the road and had to go to the bathroom really badly. And in Nigeria, you just walk to the side of the road and relieve yourself. Because they say, I wasn't going to do that, was I? Mr. Kellers, do not go into the bush because of snakes. So you learn to relieve yourself beside the road. And nobody pays any attention. So, animals. The sermon yesterday. But mostly leaders with beast-like minds. You know, God lists the Gentile kingdoms as being lion, bear, leopard, and then this horrible beast. And their leaders have that. And God has allowed it. And Satan has chosen it. See, what kind of a blessing was Hitler to Germany? I went to Germany in 1952, lived there a little over 2.5 years. Let me tell you, you could still see Germany was in ruins. Hitler didn't do Germany any good. How about Tojo in Japan? How about the rulers of China through most of the years? Were they a blessing or a curse? How about the rulers in Africa? Blessing or a curse? What if we had rulers like that? I mean, you might not like the presidents that we've had, and we've had some good ones and some bad ones, perhaps. But let me tell you, we have never, ever, ever, no matter who you pick out, had a ruler that is as bad as the rulers that they have had. Most of their rulers. Not all, but most of their rulers. Now that's a great blessing. That is a great blessing. Let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 1. You know, even the bees in Africa, they're beginning to come here. The African bees. Okay. What kind of bees does Africa have? Well, they have African bees. Cause problems for us now. How about coming into this nation? Our blessings are being taken away. We're getting West Nile fever. Guess where West Nile fever came from? Africa. Okay. We're beginning to get some of their curses. And we deserve it. What if we had had it always? Deuteronomy. Well, I'm talking about that and not turning. Deuteronomy, and I've got to turn over to chapter 7 and verse 1. When the Lord your God brings you into the land which you go to possess and has cast out many nations before you, the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations. These were Hamitic, descended from Ham. Seven nations greater and mightier than you. Did God choose Israel because they were better, stronger, smarter, more capable? Verse 2. And when the Lord your God delivers them over to you, you shall conquer them and utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them, nor show mercy to them. That's because they'd lead them astray. Going down to verses 3 and 4. Nor shall you make marriages with them. Now, what was the reason? Was it race? No. You shall not give your daughter to their sons, nor take their daughter for your sons. For, he explains the problem here now, not race. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. There was no racial problem. It was a religious problem. Let me just mention that Rahab, the harlot, who is Canaanite, married an Israelite. And she is listed in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. She is the mother of Boaz, who married Ruth. She is the great-grandmother of David. And Jesus inherited that same genealogy. Let me, a little bit, I admit. But there was no condemnation of her marrying an Israelite. Why? Because she had accepted the religion of God. She had come out of that. Also, Joseph. Joseph was a righteous man, wasn't he? Boy, he just refused to sin, even if it sent him to prison. He married an Egyptian. So, Joseph, many of us may have descended from Joseph, probably most of us. We've got Egyptian blood, that is to say, Hamitic blood, in us. And others that have it. I'll bring up another example later. Verse 14 and 15. Verse 14 and 15. You shall be blessed above all peoples. There shall not be a male or female barren among you or among your livestock. And the Lord will take away from you all sickness and will afflict you with none of the terrible diseases of Egypt which you have known, but will lay them on all those who hate you. Do you see how Israel, even to this day, is blessed? God takes it away occasionally, but always for the promise to Abraham brings it back. Oh, we're better than other races. He's not afflicting us with the terrible diseases of Egypt or Africa, but they're coming now. But we'll lay them on all those who hate you. Let's go to chapter 8 and verse 11. Chapter 8 and verse 11. And we'll read down to verse 14. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping His commandments, His judgments, and His statutes, which I command you this day, lest when you have eaten and are full, and boy, do we have a lot of food, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and we are. Lucretia, when we arrived, my wife, Thursday, and she looked out the window at the mountains, and she said, I cannot believe that I am here. When I think of where I kept the feast last year. She'll be there next year. And they found a very nice site, sounds like. And it says, beautiful houses. Verse 13, when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. And then verse 17 and 18. Verse 17. Then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you power to get wealth. Any nation that is wealthy, it came from God. That He may establish His covenant, which He swore to your fathers, as it is this day. Chapter 9, verse 1. Hear, O Israel. Deuteronomy 9, verse 1. Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today and go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourself, cities great and fortified up to heaven. Now, I want to show at least one verse that shows that Africa will be in, or two verses, in the beast, apparently in the beast power. Let's turn to Ezekiel 27. Ezekiel 27. Now, this is really talking about Tyre. But as you go through the prophecies in 27 and 28, and it shows Satan is the ruler of Tyre, it does appear that it is also a prophecy because it was conquered later by the beast, that it was, it's really prophecies also of the beast power, but one way or the other, at least shows some prophecies of the Africans. And Ezekiel 27 and verse 15, the men of Dedan, remember, we mentioned Dedan and Sheba, the grandsons of Ham. The men of Dedan were your traders. Many isles were the market of your hand. They brought you, now notice what they brought, ivory tusk. Where do you get that? And ebony. Ebony is a tree that grows in Africa with beautiful wood for carving. It's not just black. We often think of it as black, but it's black and brown streaks through it. It's gorgeous wood. Notice down in verse 22. The merchants of Sheba and Rama, now actually Rama was Sheba's father, were your merchants. So we know which Sheba definitely we're talking about here by the sort of things that they have. They traded for your wares the choicest spices, all kinds of precious stones. Africa is filled with mineral wealth. Precious stones and gold. And I caught a piece on national television, public television, educational television, some time ago. And I don't remember whether it was the 10th or the 11th century AD that one of the emperors of an empire in Africa visited Arabia and brought so much gold and gave it to the Arabian rulers that it totally collapsed the gold market as far as Europe. There was just so much gold. And it's not all been discovered yet. In Hosea chapter 2 and verse 18, Hosea chapter 2, and verse 18. This is one of my favorite feast verses. It's talking about the world tomorrow. And won't this be a blessing? In that day I will make a covenant for them with the beast of the field. It doesn't mention Sheba or Dedan or Cush here or Rama. But all nations will have this promise. In that day I will make a covenant for them with the beast of the field. Same thing we had in the sermon yesterday. With the birds of the air. And with the creeping things of the ground. Bow and sword of battle I will shatter from the earth. God's going to bless Africa. He's going to bless South America. All Gentile nations. In Moses' time, about 1500 BC, you know, Ethiopia and Egypt were constantly fighting. Great, powerful nations. But about 1500 BC, Egypt conquered Ethiopia. About the time of Moses. Now, I don't mind labeling speculation as speculation, as long as you all remember it's speculation. It is possible that, and there are some traditions, that Moses was a general that led the conquering when he was, you know, the daughter of Pharaoh's, the son of Pharaoh's daughter, that he led the armies that conquered Ethiopia. And it's possible, remember how it upset Miriam and Aaron that Moses married an Ethiopian or a Cushite woman, a black woman? It is possible that was his first wife. Now that's total speculation, that he actually conquered, married a princess. There was even a hint of that if you saw the movie The Ten Commandments when they conquered Ethiopia and this beautiful black princess walked in front of him and made, you know, eyes at him. Any of you happen to remember that? Some of you do. Okay. That he married, and she stayed in Egypt when he fled for 40 years, and when he came back and they left, that she left with her husband. That's a possibility. But that's totally speculation. But he did marry a Cushite woman, and God did not condemn him for that. But in Isaiah's time, around 750 B.C., Ethiopia conquered Egypt. And the rulers of the 23rd dynasty of Egypt were all black. All during the life of Isaiah, and if you read the book of Isaiah, it mentions Ethiopia, and it's talking and warning the people of Israel not to make league with the Ethiopian rulers, because they were ruling Egypt at that time. In Isaiah 18 and verse 1, Isaiah 18 and verse 1, so during the time that he is writing, and he mentions Ethiopia through here, not a lot, but about eight times. And in Isaiah 18, of course, every time he mentions Egypt in a contemporary prophecy for that time, it's talking about Egypt being ruled by black Cushites. Isaiah 18 and verse 1, woe, and by the way, the heading just above, underneath chapter 18, just above the beginning, it says prophecies against Ethiopia. The NIV has prophecies against Cush. Woe to the land shadowed with buzzing wings, which is beyond the rivers of Ethiopia. Now you see, even beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, all the way, you're going into Africa. Down and deep into Africa. And then, dropping down to verse 7. In that time, and this is, let me go back. I'll do that often. This is now talking about God's kingdom on earth and Ethiopia being brought into God's kingdom. And it says, speaking of Cush, in that time, a present will be brought to the Lord of hosts from a people tall and smooth of skin. Talking about the Ethiopians, the blacks of Africa. From a people terrible from their beginning onward. Strong, powerful people. A nation powerful and treading down, whose land the rivers divide, to the place of the name of the Lord of hosts to Mount Zion. That is the blacks of Africa. Their headquarters and their capital city will be Jerusalem. And you just do not know how thrilled those people will be when they are told, you are now Israelites. Spiritually, and they can be physically. You know, most West Africans are men are circumcised. Now, I've not actually gone around to check. But they tell me, basically, they're all circumcised. And remember, there are only 12 gates of the city, and each tribe enters into its own gate. So does that mean that everybody on earth eventually becomes a part of Israel? We know spiritually they will. Speaking of this verse, the Expositor's Bible Commentary says this, even the Greeks like Herodotus, who was a Greek historian, shared the general admiration felt in antiquity for the tall, handsome, clean-shaved Nubians of Cush. The military reputation they already possessed had been much enhanced by their recent conquest of mighty Egypt. The NIV has, at that time, gifts will be brought to the Lord Almighty from a people tall and smooth-skinned, for a people feared far and wide, an aggressive nation of strange speech, whose land is divided by rivers. The gifts will be brought to Mount Zion, the place of the name of the Lord Almighty. There is no record that ever happened during the time of Isaiah to this day. It's a prophecy of the world tomorrow. Let's notice in Isaiah 19 and verse 21 through 25. Isaiah 19. Verse 21 through 25. This is talking about the world tomorrow. It says, then the Lord will be known to Egypt. The word is Mitzrayim. Will God return all nations to the land He gave them? Or is He just speaking of Mitzrayim as a place name? We do not know. Then the Lord will be known to Egypt. We do know it's at least speaking of that land because of what He says. And the Egyptians will know the Lord. in that day and will make sacrifice and offerings. Yes, they will make a vow to the Lord and perform it. And the Lord will strike Egypt. We read that in Zechariah 14. He's going to strike them with drought. They don't care. They don't get rain anyway. But then he's going to send a plague on them. He will strike and heal it. They will return to the Lord. This is part of Africa. Not of Cush, but it is part of Africa. And he will be entreated by them and heal them. The plague will be taken away. In that day there will be a highway from Egypt to Assyria. Now Egypt is directly south of Jerusalem, Palestine, Israel. But Assyria is to the north. Assyria sits up right in the middle of the Eurasian continent, in a sense. And Egypt is the north part of the African continent, the northeast part. So here is going to be a highway running from the Eurasian continent right through Palestine down to Egypt. It's going to be a highway that will eventually expand, in my opinion, for people to come to keep the feast. There'll be a highway from Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrian will come into Egypt, and the Egyptian into Assyria, and the Egyptians will serve with the Assyrians. In that day, Israel will be one of three with Egypt and Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land. God's going to start with Israel. He's going to expand north. He's going to expand south with his kingdom. And these three will be a great blessing. Notice verse 25. Can you imagine? Whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, blessed is Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my inheritance. God loves all people. God loves the Egyptians. Their problem? He couldn't use them now. They're too great. Couldn't use the Assyrians now. They're too powerful. Satan wanted them. Same is true with most nations. He chose weak, little Israel, and they've become great. We say, oh, we're so smart. Let me tell you, we quoted Oludare Akinbo Dari. He's probably smarter than 99% of the people in this room. And he is really black. He has a master's degree in biochemistry. He has a photographic memory. He was going for his doctorate and had won a grant. But his two advisors began fighting over, remember this is Africa, the money. So he finally withdrew. He's making his money now, doing computer work, programming for people, putting computers into businesses in Nigeria, doing websites. And he has a photographic memory. I mean, if that's not literal, but he is a brilliant man. And here's the strange thing, that someone so gifted, so smart, I mean a lot smarter than I am, so gifted, is so humble in serving. There's a Cushite that God is using. Verse 40, chapter 42, verse 1. Isaiah, chapter 42, and verse 1. Speaking of Jesus Christ, the Messiah, behold my servant whom I uphold, my elect one in whom my soul delights. Now dropping to verse 4. He will not fail nor be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands, all of the far-flung Gentile nations, far away from Israel, shall wait for his law. Verse 6, Isaiah 42, verse 6. I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness, and will hold your hand. I will keep you and give you as a covenant to the people, as a light to the Gentiles. As I said, some of these are going to be for all peoples. Chapter 49, verses 6 through 12. Chapter 49, verses 6 through 12. I hope that you can clearly see, I've said a few speculative things. I've labeled them as speculation. And, you know, feel free to disagree anytime with speculation or something out of the Jewish encyclopedia that isn't based on the Bible. It's not based on the Bible. I mean, it's very easy to see that Cush was in Ethiopia. That's very obvious. But, and you can prove that. And that they are black. You can prove that. Anyway, chapter 49, beginning in verse 6, indeed, he says, is it too small a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and restore the preserved ones of Israel? I will also give you, this is Jesus, as a light to the Gentiles, that you should be my salvation to the ends of the earth. God does not love Israel more than any one other people, race, tribe. Let me just tell you that when I was a young man, and I'm 66, no one who was in one of the... I lived in South Carolina off and on. I was an Army brat, but my parents came from South Carolina. Nobody there would have ever considered that you could have a quarterback be... And as they would have said it, a colored man. Or they might have said worse. But they would have never believed quarterback. Or even a football team. Or a baseball. Remember that. They just couldn't do it. They just weren't smart enough. Well, is that true? Try telling Steve McNair that. Do it over the phone. A lot of people in Tennessee are sick that man was let go. Look at the nearest basketball court. Do you see inferior people there? I'm not saying they're superior. I'm just saying they have been held back by a curse. By being chosen by Satan. I mean, look at Colin Powell when he was given a chance. Condoleezza Rice, Kofi Annan, Secretary General of the United Nations, is from Ghana, West Africa, a gentle people. Not all Africans are violent. You're safer in Ghana than you are here. Your daughters can walk the streets in Ghana day or night and be safe. They don't have rape. They don't have murder. If there is a murder in Ghana, they say it's a Nigerian that came in. And it probably was. Kofi, they name... Am I repeating myself? Is there an echo in here? Kofi is a Ghanaian word, probably of the Twi language, that means Friday. Because every child in Ghana has maybe 6-7 names, but one of them is always the day of the week that he or she was born. Kofi means Friday. Now, what if you have two sons who are born on a Friday? Well, number two you call Kofi 2. If you have three sons born on a Friday, it's Kofi 3. Of course, the African words. If you have a fourth son born on a Friday, it's Kofi 4. Annan means four. Kofi Annan means the fourth Kofi born, the fourth son born on a Friday. Now, you may not agree with Colin Powell or Condoleezza Rice or Kofi Annan's politics, but you cannot say that these aren't brilliant people. And they are. salvation to the ends of the earth. Thus says the Lord, the Redeemer of Israel, verse 7, their Holy One, to him whom man despises, to him whom the nation abhors, to the servant of rulers. Kings shall see and arise, princes shall also worship, because of the Lord who is faithful, the Holy One of Israel, and he has chosen you. Thus says the Lord, verse 8 now, chapter 49, in an acceptable time I have heard you, and in the day of salvation I have helped you. I will preserve you and give you as a covenant to the people to restore the earth, to cause them to inherit the desolate heritages, that you may say to the prisoners, go forth, and to those who are in darkness, show yourselves. These are promises that God has made. And it says, they shall feed along the roads. They're coming up to Israel, and their pastures shall be on all desolate heights. They shall neither hunger nor thirst, neither heat nor sun shall strike them. They certainly do hunger in Africa now. For he who has mercy on them will lead them. Even by the springs of water he will guide them. I will make each of my mountains a road, and my highways shall be elevated. Surely these shall come from afar. Look, those from the north and the west, and those from the land of Sinim. There's a question. Some think that that might be referring to China, because it's a classical name for China. But many think it means Aswan, going up into that area of Africa. So that's people are going to come from those areas. Go down to chapter 55, verse 1. Chapter 55 and verse 1 of Isaiah. Ho, everyone who thirsts comes to the waters, and you have no money, come buy and eat. Yes, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. It's speaking spiritually. They certainly will have blessings in Africa. Africa is one of the most blessed continents with land and minerals, and Nigeria should be the wealthiest nation in all of Africa. It's certainly the most populous, but it's a member of OPEC. It exports oil. But it does the people who live right there where the oil comes out of the ground no good. Because, like I tell the Nigerians, I say, you know why I come here? It's to get your money. I say, you know, you would be the wealthiest nation in all of Africa, perhaps even the world, but you keep sending your money to Switzerland. Of course, not the people in the audience, but the rulers who just rape and pillage the money and the wealth. And they get all the advantage from the oil. Going down to verse 5. Surely you shall call a nation you do not know. It's talking about Gentiles. And nations who do not know you shall run to you. The Africans will run to God. They are seeking. They need deliverance, and they know it. Verse 13, instead of the thorn shall come up the cypress tree. Instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree. You think we have briars in Kenya? They have got thorn trees with thorns this long, and they fall off in groups that stick together. We went one feast. We took an excursion. We were going to have a picnic out, and we had to pick up all these balls of thorns. And I read this to them. And I remember one of them, I think it was David Gashuro, the deacon over there, came up and said, I cannot wait until these thorn trees are gone. I mean, they don't have them that bad in West Africa and Nigeria, but in East Africa, they certainly do. And go down to chapter 56, verse 6 through 8. Chapter 56, verse 6 to 8. Also the sons of the foreigner who join themselves to the Lord to serve him and to love the name of the Lord to be his servants. Everyone who keeps from defiling the Sabbath and holds fast my covenant. Even them I will bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices will be accepted on my altar. For my house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations. The Lord God who gathers the outcast of Israel says, yet I will gather to him others besides those who are gathered to him. Chapter 60, verse 3 chapter 60, verse 3. The Gentiles shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. You think we have fun? Can you imagine? Some of the people in Africa could ride an elephant to the feast. And their magnificent robes and the gold and the silver that the Bible says they will bring to Jerusalem. And Jerusalem will be filled with gold. Why? Because they will want to bring their gold and their silver and their precious stones to their capital city. Their capital city. And where did I get to? Verse 60. You know, I didn't read part of it here, did I? Yeah, verse 3. Thank you. And verse 5. Then you shall see and become radiant, and your heart shall swell with joy, because of the abundance of the sea shall be turned to you. The wealth of the Gentiles shall come to you. And that's going to be willing. And verse 10. The sons of foreigners shall build up your walls, and kings shall minister to you. For in my wrath I struck you, but in my favor I have had mercy on you. Therefore your gates shall be open continually. They shall not be shut day or night, that men may bring to you the wealth of the Gentiles and their kings in procession. And I imagine on giant elephants, African elephants, the big ones. Verse 16. Now, this is mistranslation. You shall drink dry the milk of the Gentiles. The word dry is not in the Hebrew. It's in italics. You shall drink the milk of the Gentiles. How can you drink the milk of the Gentiles and receive their glory except they are glorious? It talks about the glory of the Gentiles will come. That's because those nations will be so blessed and so rich that they will have abundance of gold and silver and wealth to give away and precious stones. The tsetse fly will no longer be a problem. The Sahara Desert, which is larger than the 48 United States contiguous, almost as large as the United States, including Alaska, and throw in Hawaii. It is 3.5 million square miles. And they say it is very fertile if it just had water. Can you imagine that? I mean, it makes our deserts, the Sonoran Desert of Arizona and New Mexico and West Texas, or the Mojave or the Great Basin, up into Nevada and into Utah as nothing. Nothing. 3.5 million square miles. And down further down, Botswana's Kalahari is over 1/3 of a million square miles. I want to turn to Isaiah 68 and verse 31. Psalm. Did I say Isaiah? Sure did. Psalm 68, verse 31. Boy, would that have confused you. Psalm 68 and verse 31. This is talking about the kingdom of God. It says in verse 29, kings will bring presents to you. And verse 31, envoys will come out of Egypt. Egypt will be a great blessing on this earth. Ethiopia, the word is Cush, it's referring to all blacks in Africa. Ethiopia, Cush, will quickly stretch out her hands to God. The Africans are not they're not stiff-necked and stubborn the way we are. Now, sometimes I wish they were a little more stubborn, because that can be good for good things, but some of them come to us quickly and leave. But they're not as stubborn. And that can be a blessing and a curse. As I said, no race is better. They're just different things. Being stiff-necked Israelites can be good if you're stiff-necked for the truth, and can be rotten if you're stiff-necked against God. So it's a blessing and a curse. Neither way is better, necessarily. Ethiopia, Cush, will quickly stretch out her hands to God. Let me just read that in the American Standard. Princes shall come out of Egypt. Ethiopia shall haste to stretch out her hands unto God. They will be one of the ones after Egypt that will quickly turn to God. The Living Bible has it, God bless this day. Like my wife this morning, when I read how it was cool, and she walked out when I read that from Mark, and she said, "Wow! Wow! Don't worry, honey, it'll be hot next year when we go." Here from the Living Bible, Ethiopia will stretch out her hands to God in adoration. God bring that day. Thank you, Father, for what you're doing in Nigeria for the feast today.